text 36, Arjuna had asked Krishna, what is it that impels a person to sin as though by force against his will? And Krishna replied that it's what? Lust. Where does lust come from? Where does lust come from?
Lust to contemplate.
Yeah, no, that's the last chapter. In this chapter, where does lust come from?
Oh, okay. The process.
Yeah, comes into contact with the material mode of passion. What comes into contact with the material mode of passion?
Love.
Love, right. Who's love? Huh?
Love of Krishna.
Who has it?
Everybody. Living entity.
The living entity. The living entity that falls in the material world comes into contact with the mode of passion. And his love for Krishna then gets transformed into lust. What's the example that is given for this transforming heat? Yeah. He says yogurt here. I think that must be curd. Huh? Sometimes, I don't know, in India they use the word yogurt to mean curd.
Curd? It's not real curd.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It says here that just as milk in contact with sour tamarind turns into yogurt. I always thought yogurt, you had to put a yogurt culture in.
Yogurt means, curd means, that's like yogurt, thick, very thick.
Yeah.
Salt, that's
curd. Like, I know, a lot of people, they eat the milk and then just throw a little yogurt in the milk and it becomes yogurt.
Right, right. But this is talking about curdling. Yeah, anyway. Sort of like, just like if you take, anyway, the idea of curdling milk. So when milk comes in contact with tamarind or lemon juice, it becomes curd. So similarly, when the love that the soul has for God turns and comes into contact with the mode of passion. And then he said, kama esha, krodha esha. What is krodha?
Anger.
Anger, huh? Where does that come from?
Unfulfilled desire. It's not fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Desires are not fulfilled. You get angry.
From unfulfilled anger, right? Then you, from unfulfilled wrath. I mean, unfulfilled lust. You get wrath. Excuse me. Right. So that way, the mode of passion tends to what? And what is wrath in? It's in the mode of ignorance. And how can passion go the other way toward goodness?
By performance of prescribed duties.
By performance of yajna or sacrifice according to prescribed duties, right? So that was. Then he mentions 3 degrees of lust that cover the soul. What are the examples that he gives of the 3 degrees of lust? Embryo of the rumen. What are these situations? What do they denote?
Human,
animal, plant. You answered that yesterday. How much sense gratification will satisfy lust? It's never satisfied. Right. Burns like fire, it's never satisfied. What specific arrangement keeps the living entity shackled within the material world?
Maitunya agra.
Maitunya agara, which being interpreted is?
Shackles of sex life.
Shackles of sex life.
Where is that at?
Huh?
Which verse is that?
Where is that at? It's a nice word to know. Maitunya agara. You can throw that around. Page 207. In the purport. Maitunya agara. Agara. Excuse me, not agara. Agara. The shackles of sex.
What is shackles?
Shackles? Like handcuffs. Or like chains, you know, chains and the things put on your arms and legs. It's called shackles. Yes. Where does lust reside in the body? Yes.
In the
senses, the mind, the intelligence. Yeah. What's the process by which lust comes to occupy these strategic positions within the body? Yeah, Prabhupada in the purport pretty much describes a process by which lust comes to take over the senses and the mind.
Isn't it the same process again in the second chapter? Isn't it the same process in the second chapter?
Yeah, here's described a little bit differently, because here's describing what happens psychologically, while there it's just describing the sequence. Okay, let's go look at this, he said. Page 208. Okay. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all activities of the senses, and thus when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. So from the senses to the mind. And as a result, the mind and the senses become repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. And we spent most of the class yesterday talking about how intelligence becomes influenced in this way. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter and thus with the mind and the senses. That's how your false ego comes about. When you acquire lusty intelligence, that influences the spirit soul to identify itself with the body. So yesterday we had a long discussion about intelligence, which I'm not going to repeat today. If anybody wants to get it, it's taped on the Bat Blaster here. Okay, so now today we're going to go on to text 41. This is the final section. So having now discussed the workings of lust as they bewilder the conditioned soul, Krishna is now going to tell Arjuna in the concluding three verses of this chapter how he can overcome the influence of lust. And he mentions two things: by knowing the position of the soul and by regulating the senses. So let's go on now. Let's start with text number 41. Tasmatvam indriyanyadau.
Tasmatvam indriyanyadau.
Niyamya bharatarshabha.
Niyamya bharatarshabha.
Papmanam prajahihenam.
Papmanam prajahihenam.
Jnana vijnana nashanam.
Jnana vijnana nashanam.
Tasmat, therefore, tvam, you, indriyani, senses, adau, in the beginning, niyamya, by regulating, Bharata Rishabha, O chief among the descendants of Bharata, papmanam, the great symbol of sin, prajahi, curb, he certainly, enam, this, jnana, of knowledge, vijnana, and scientific knowledge of the pure soul, nashanam, the destroyer. Translation. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Let's read it together. Therefore,
in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization.
Purport. The Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful enemy, lust, which destroys the urge for self-realization and specific knowledge of the self. Jnana refers to the knowledge of the self, knowledge of self as distinguished from non-self, or in other words, knowledge that the spirit soul is not the body. Vijnana refers to specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position and his relationship to the Supreme Soul. It is explained thus in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31, Jnanam paramam guhyam me yad vijnana samanvitam sarahasyam taragam cha grihana gaditam maya. The knowledge of the Self and Supreme Self is very confidential and mysterious. But such knowledge and specific realization can be understood if explained with their various aspects by the Lord Himself. Bhagavad Gita gives us that general and specific knowledge of the self. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord, and therefore they are simply meant to serve the Lord. This consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. So from the very beginning of life, one has to learn this Krishna consciousness, and thereby one may become fully Krishna conscious and act accordingly. Lust is only the perverted reflection of the love of God, which is natural for every living entity. But if one is educated in Krishna consciousness, from the very beginning, that natural love of God cannot deteriorate into lust. When love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regulative principles of devotional service. So from any stage of life, or from the time of understanding its urgency, one can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord, and turn lust into love of Godhead, the highest perfectional stage of human life. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So here's what Krishna calls lust, this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So he advises him that by regulating the senses, and he says here from the very beginning, you can curb this great symbol of sin. Sensual regulation. And it destroys, he says here, jnanam vijnanam. So these two terms, jnana vijnana, show up a lot, not only in Bhagavad Gita, but in Srimad Bhagavatam. So the basic meaning is here, Prabhupada, they're translated as jnana as knowledge and vijnana as realization. Sometimes knowledge and realization. Sometimes knowledge and wisdom. In the Bhagavad Gita, he uses wisdom. Prabhupada calls it sometimes, in the Bhagavatam, he calls jnana confidential knowledge and vijnana more confidential knowledge. Sometimes also, jnana is theoretical knowledge and vijnana is practical knowledge. And that fits together with the others. I'll explain how all these different meanings kind of fit together.
Jnana is science also.
Well, actually, when the word science is now translated in Sanskrit, they use vijnana. Okay. Vijnana.
Get my marks in Sanskrit.
Huh?
When I got marks in Sanskrit, yeah. In science, I got it as vijnana.
Vijnana, right. Uh-huh. So vijnana is used as science. And Prabhupada uses that word also as Krishna consciousness. When he ever calls Krishna consciousness a science, it's based on this word vijnana. So he explains here, jnana refers to knowledge of the self as distinguished from the non-self, or in other words, knowledge that the spirit soul is not the body. So this knowledge, I am not this body, that's called jnana. Vijnana, the specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position is relationship to the supreme soul. That is, I am the servant of Krishna. I am not this body is jnana, that's what I'm not. What am I? Positive, that is vijnana, more confidential knowledge. I am the servant of Krishna. So the jnanis are the people that have this knowledge, I am not the body, but they do not yet have the realization that I am the servant of Krishna. Right? So it's lower and higher. But it's practical too, because you cannot have the realization that I am the servant of Krishna unless you actually act in that realization. So with jnana, the tendency is sometimes not to act. It's associated with inaction, withdrawal, silence, and so on. Abnegation, becoming a hermit, and so on. Whereas vijnana is associated with bhakti, acting using the senses in the service of Krishna, not Silence on material topics, but full of talk about Krishna, and so on. So that's also referred to as practical. So sometimes Jnana Vijnana is practical application. The practical application, if I am not this body, I am a soul, but the practical application is, well, how do I act as a soul? What does a soul do? The soul engages in the service of the spirit soul. We know very well how to act on the basis that I am this body. We engage in sense gratification. But if I am not this body, then what do I do? So we know the practical application of Jnana. The realization is that I should engage in the service of Krishna. So that's the difference, Jnana, Vijnana. So you'll see these two terms. Later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, now I've explained this knowledge to you, both Jnana and Vijnana. And there Prabhupada translates it as phenomenal and numinous knowledge. That is, in that case, Jnana means of the material world, and numinous means everything that's beyond it. That's another meaning of the term. But here is knowledge and self-realization. So whenever you see that, also symptoms of a Brahman in Bhagavad Gita, Shama Dhamma Tapa Sochim Shantam Arjivam Evacha Jnana Vijnana Astikyam. Jnana Vijnana, both are there, Jnana and Vijnana. He has knowledge of the soul, and he also knows how to apply that knowledge and act in the service of Krishna. And so, any questions? Yeah?
Exactly how does regulating the senses help further? Is it because it's like a sacrifice or
Yeah, well, probably, he's been explaining this chapter already that the senses ultimately become regulated by engaging them in Krishna's service. That was explained already. And therefore, experiencing a higher taste of Krishna consciousness.
That's what it means to regulate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Engaging them in Krishna service. Certainly not letting them roam and go free. But it's using the intelligence to control the mind and the senses.
You see people like of various religions who, even they don't know Krishna by any name, but they have some kind of regulation for their lives, mm-hmm. Ten Commandments. Or
mm-hmm. So that's at least a beginning. That keeps the fire from burning too high. It doesn't put it out. But at least it keeps from becoming a forest fire. Like it is now. So that's the regulated sense gratification. So that also curbs that curbs it. But here it's just, he says, this is the lust is the destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So any time the lust is there, you should know it's just like a corrosive, and any spiritual realization that is there is destroyed by lust. And when there's spiritual realization, lust is going to go down. It's just and they're antithetical. They just can't be combined in some optimal mixture that's going to give you both sense gratification and spiritual life at the same time. As I said before, it's just like a balance. When one goes up, the other goes down. When the other goes down, the one goes up. At the Rainbow Festival, you'll see the whole effort is to try to get both together. Some are really going to be on the spiritual path and gratify their senses at the same time. It just doesn't work. Yes?
I was going to ask you before if the right word is.
No, it's a destroyer. Jnana means that's knowing that I am not this body. So if one is in the grip of lust, you cannot know that I am not this body. That doesn't work. If lust is there, you're going to think I am this body. Well, a person maybe start to gaze in Krishna consciousness, but it's really funny because you can, if you become covered by lust, you can forget everything you knew. I hope it's temporary. Yeah, sure. So you'll come back again. You come back. But one doesn't want to take too long a vacation from the process.
symptoms for a person who is to found this fear?
What?
If any person is found with this, if it is not regulated, so means lost his inclusion and spiritualization is down for the person. Mm-hmm. And how do you see the devotee? How do you see among us? So?
Well, we know what a sage, a steady mind is. We already know those symptoms. Mm-hmm. So, viparipani, just the opposite. How does he speak? How does he walk? What is his... So a person who's... So notice vijnana is... later on, Prabhupada describes it as general and specific knowledge of the self. Knowledge and specific realization. So it's kind of general, I am not this body. That's abstract, I am spirit. But more concretely, because... I know that as a spirit soul, my place in the scheme of things is to be the servant of the great soul, Vibhuatma. Remember we had that earlier? Anuatma and Vibhuatma? Anu and Vibhu?
Anu is small and
Vibhu is great, right? Krishna's Vibhuatma, Anuatma. So from the very beginning of life, one has to learn this Krishna consciousness, and thereby one may become fully Krishna conscious and act accordingly. Lust is only the perverted reflection of the love of God, which is natural for every living entity. But if one is educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning, that means from one's childhood. Educating children in Krishna consciousness from the beginning of life can ensure that their natural love for Krishna will not deteriorate into lust. That's the point, that when he says from the very beginning, means from the outset of your life, before you go too far, if you're educated in spiritual life and Krishna consciousness, then if you catch it in the very beginning, so before adolescence, and you don't get engaged in lustful activities, then you're best off. That's the best policy to follow. When love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to its normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God. So not to be discouraged, one of these late beginners can become a lover of God by following the regulative principles of devotional service. That's how. There's just no substitute for that... that effort to follow the regular principles of devotional service. So from any stage of life, or from the time of understanding its urgency, one can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord. So see, Sadama, that's what he says about regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord. And turn lust into love of God at the highest perfectional stage of human life. Now, any questions about that? Yes.
There's regulation also referred to like doing everything
regularly. That usually happens. That's the regulative principles of devotional service, right? You have something to do at every time. You should know what you're doing. Everything should be pretty well scheduled. What time you get up? What time you take rest? What time you take prasadam? It's also to training the senses to be regulated. Sure, that's part of it. Can we go on to the next text now? So this is text number 42. Indriyani paranyahur.
Indriyebhya paramana.
Manasastu parabudhir.
Yo bhudhe paratastu saha.
Indriyani, senses, parani, superior, ahu, are said, indriyabhyaha, more than the senses, param, superior, manaha, the mind, manasaha, more than the mind, to also para, superior, buddhihi, intelligence, yaha, who, buddhe, more than the intelligence, parataha, superior to, but saha, he. Translation: the working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. So let's read it together. The working senses are superior to dull matter.
Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence.
Purport: the senses are different outlets for the activities of lust. Lust is reserved within the body, but it is given vent through the senses. Therefore, the senses are superior to the body as a whole. These outlets are not in use when there is superior consciousness or Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, the soul makes direct connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the hierarchy of bodily functions, as described here, ultimately ends in the Supreme Soul. Bodily action means the functions of the senses, and stopping the senses means stopping all bodily actions. But since the mind is active, then even though the body may be silent and at rest, the mind will act as it does during dreaming. But above the mind is the determination of the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul proper. If, therefore, the soul is directly engaged with the Supreme, naturally all other subordinates, namely the intelligence, mind, and senses, will be automatically engaged. In the Katha Upanishad, there is a similar passage in which it is said that the objects of sense gratification are superior to the senses, and mind is superior to the sense objects. If, therefore, the mind is directly engaged in the service of the Lord constantly, then there is no chance that the senses will become engaged in other ways. This mental attitude has already been explained. Param drishtva nivartante. If the mind is engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is no chance of its being engaged in the lower propensities. In the Katha Upanishad, the soul has been described as Mahan, the great. Therefore, the soul is above all, namely the sense objects, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. Therefore, directly understanding the constitutional position of the soul is the solution of the whole problem. With intelligence, one has to seek out the constitutional position of the soul and then engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. That solves the whole problem. A neophyte spiritualist is generally advised to keep aloof from the objects of the senses. But aside from that, one has to strengthen the mind by use of intelligence. If by intelligence one engages one's mind in Krishna consciousness, by complete surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically the mind becomes stronger, and even though the senses are very strong, like serpents, they will be no more effective than serpents with broken fangs. But even though the soul is the master of intelligence and mind, and the senses also, still, unless it is strengthened by association with Krishna in Krishna consciousness, there is every chance of falling down due to the agitated mind. So, the working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is higher than the intelligence. So this is a hierarchy, but it's in terms of subtleness. The senses are more subtle than matter. In this case, when they say senses, or like earlier in the Katha Upanishad, it refers to the sense objects being superior to the senses. That's again, it's in terms of subtlety. How does it say? Yeah. Superior to the senses. But for example, this, when they talk about a sense here, it doesn't mean like the ear. the sense is hearing. The organ of sense is to hear. So hearing, the senses, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, these are the senses. And they're embodied in particular types of organs for carrying these things out. Like generally, the sense of taste is there in a tongue. Except in a fish, for example, its sense of taste is embedded in a little stripe that runs across his body. His body is a tongue. Actually, the Prabhupada says fish life is mostly tongue. So confirmed by National Geographic magazine or wherever I read that fact. Because they're in water, right? Taste depends on water. The fishes are in water, so therefore they can taste with their whole bodies. There's no taste without water. So, because that's the particular quality that it adheres in water, is taste. So anyway, so this is the hierarchy in terms of subtlety. One is higher than the other. So what Prabhupada discusses here is how to how this control of these agents come about. The soul is higher than the intelligence, and higher than the soul is the super soul. So Prabhupada says this is he's discussing how do we control the senses, and he says just stopping the activity of the senses means stopping bodily activities. You do that, but the mind is still active. And it's a fact, because like when you're asleep and dreaming, the mind is active. You can sit very still and the mind can be very active. So the mind has its own activities. So the mind has to also be stilled or stopped or somehow or other controlled. So he says the mind is directly engaged in the service of the Lord constantly, then there is no chance that the senses will be engaged in other ways. So that's the idea, because the here the implicit in is from subtle to gross that we understand that first of all there's the mahatattva, and then that differentiates into various subtle formations, and then when the matter is created, it starts with the subtle. Subtlest is first. And first of all, there is sound. Actually, sound appears, and from sound comes ether, or what we call space. And it has ether has this quality of sound. And then the next thing that appears is touch and air. Because air has both qualities, sound and touch. Therefore, air is grosser than ether. And then after that is fire, which has sound, touch, and form. Then after that is water, which is sound, touch, form, and taste. And finally, earth, sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. So this has the different qualities. So it comes from the top down. And when it winds up, it goes the opposite direction. So that's how it works in this way, from subtle to gross. So the grosser is actually, this grosser is not as strong as the subtle. It's like the mind is subtler, but it directs the senses, which are grosser. That's in the ordinary course of things. So this tells us how to strengthen the mind, how to control the senses. So that's, the mind is engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord. There's no chance of it being engaged in the lower propensities. So the soul has been described as the great. Therefore, directly understanding the constitutional position of the soul is the solution to the whole problem. So that's what we have to understand. What is the constitutional position of the soul? When Prabhupada means constitutional position, what does he mean? Huh?
Original.
Yeah, original. What is the original position?
Huh?
Right. That's she said it there in Bengali language. What is it again? Jivera Swarup Hoy
Krishnera Nityadas.
Krishnera Nityadas. The Swarup. Swarup is the word for constitutional position. That means its own form or nature. is to be Krishnara Nitya Das, eternally servant of Krishna.
Jiva.
Jiva. Of the spirit soul, its swarup is Krishna Das, servant of Krishnara Nitya Das. So, constitute, the word constitution means that of which something is constituted, or what it composes, its essential nature. You can't change it, you can't alter it, you can't mess with it. It's essential. So the other term that we use for constitutional position is dharma. The notion of dharma has the same idea, that by which a thing is what it is. Dharma of sugar is to be sweet. The dharma of fire is to burn. You take it out and it's not sugar or it's not fire anymore. It's something else. So that's the dharma of the soul, is to serve Krishna. So we start with the soul. How do we understand the constitutional soul? With intelligence, one has to seek out the constitutional position of the soul. So that is the function of intelligence, to understand and to discriminate between the spirit and matter, to be able to tell what is the difference between the soul and the body. When you discriminate like that, that is the act of intelligence.
How does he say it here?
So, okay. With intelligence, one has to seek out the constitutional position of the soul and then engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. And we talked about this yesterday a lot. When the mind is engaged in a certain way or a certain mindset, what engages the mind or what changes mindsets, that's intelligence. In that sense, it's higher than the mind. It's a more subtle function. It's harder to understand. But what determines mindsets, determines your whole outlook on life, your worldview, your Weltanschauung, your way of seeing things, that's intelligence. Right? So that engages the mind always in Krishna consciousness. That solves the whole problem. A neophyte spiritualist is generally advised to keep aloof from the object of the senses. But aside from that, one has to strengthen the mind by use of the intelligence. So that way, and we talked again yesterday about that, how like the intelligence, eventually, by intelligence, by engaging the mind always in Krishna consciousness, your mind becomes habituated to think in terms of Krishna consciousness. Because the mind is very inertial. It just keeps on doing whatever it's been programmed to do. Because it's full of, it's where habits, habitual in the... And habitual associations of ideas are there. When the mind has been retrained by the intelligence, when you see a sense object, you'll simply think, how can I use this sense object in Krishna's service? Before that, you see a sense object, you think, how can I enjoy it? It's automatically thought of as something that's enjoyable by me. When it's in Krishna consciousness, you automatically see sense objects as that which is enjoyable by Krishna. And I'm simply to offer these things to Krishna. So if you're Krishna conscious, you meet another human being of the opposite sex, you automatically simply think, how can this person be engaged in Krishna service? Not how can I use this person to satisfy my lust? And so on. When you see some nice vegetables in the fruit market, you immediately think, oh, what a nice offering for Krishna. Not, oh, I'm going to enjoy this. So that's when the mind has become strengthened by use of intelligence. If by intelligence one engages one mind in Krishna consciousness, then by complete surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically the mind becomes stronger. And even though the senses are very strong like serpents, they'll be no more effective than serpents with broken fangs. Earlier, the senses had been described as serpents, remember? And I think it was the same purport that talked about a turtle. That the Prabhupada yogi is compared to a turtle. You draw the senses from the sense objects. So in that same purport, Prabhupada mentions that the senses are often compared to serpents. angry serpents. They see something move and they wham, they strike. So here they're like serpents with broken fangs. They can't do any damage, even though the senses may be a little agitated. So here's the fixed up. So the strengthening comes from the top down. Even though the soul is the master of intelligence and mind and the senses also, still, unless it is strengthened by associating with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, there's every chance of falling down to the agitated mind. So the soul becomes strong by associating with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. That makes the intelligence strong. The intelligence makes the mind strong. The mind is strong. It keeps the senses under control. So this is how it's, Prabhupada is describing sense control. That's pretty clear, huh? Yes?
It says that the objects of the senses are superior to, are stronger than the senses. That seems to be a contradiction to the superiority of the subtle senses.
Objects of the senses. Objects of the senses are called tanmatra. That is form, tactility, sound. So those things are also subtle. For example, when I see the form of an object, like I see the form of that tree, the tree doesn't enter into my perception, but the subtle form does. So it's also subtle, like that. They're called tanmatra, taste and the various sense objects. They're not the gross things, what you perceive, what impinges upon your senses. It's a subtle form of the gross things. Anything else? Okay, let's go on. Let's finish the chapter today. That means that next week we'll start the review to be uninterrupted, I guess, by a short foreway into the Rainbow Festival.
What's the difference between perceiving the soul actually and perceiving it with your intelligence?
The same. It's that by intelligence you can perceive the soul, because it allows you to discriminate. What's the difference between
soul and self? A self-realized person, he sees his self with intelligence also.
Yeah, sure. By means of intelligence, that's the instrument by which you can do that. Okay, let's go on to chapter text 43. Evam bhure puram buddhva.
Evam bhure puram buddhva.
Samstabhyatmanam atmana.
Samstabhyatmanam atmana.
Jahi Shatru Mahabaho.
Jahi Shatru Mahabaho.
Kamarupam Durasadam.
Kamarupam Durasadam.
Evam, thus, Buddhe, to intelligence, Param, superior, Buddhva, knowing, Sanstabhya, by steadying, Atmanam, the mind, Atmana, by deliberate intelligence, Jahi, conquer, Shatrum, the enemy, Mahabaho, O mighty armed one, Kamarupam, in the form of lust, Durasadam, formidable. Translation. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus, by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy, known as lust. So let's say together.
Thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, almighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust.
Sri Prabhupada's purport. This third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directive to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without considering impersonal voidness the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by material senses and the mind, by steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. This is the sum total of this chapter. In the immature stage of material existence, philosophical speculations and artificial attempts to control the senses by the so-called practice of yogic postures can never help a man towards spiritual life. He must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports to the third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of karma yoga, or the discharge of one's prescribed duty in Krishna consciousness. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So here's the, remember this whole chapter has also been about, he's been asking, he said, if you think intelligence is better than work, why do you engage me in this ghastly warfare? So what he's, Krishna is actually explaining is how to work with intelligence. So this is the meaning of this chapter. Prabhupada, here he said, the discharge of one's prescribed duties in Krishna consciousness, that's what this chapter is about. So this, by deliberate spiritual intelligence, that means Krishna consciousness. That's how one knows oneself to be transcendental. And that's the way you engage yourself properly so that one becomes free from the influence of lust and desire. And Prabhupada here he says, this is the sum total of this chapter. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden. But by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind, by steady intelligence directed toward one's pure identity. So that's what he's talking about. That you can conquer lust by engaging your senses, mind, and intelligence always in devotional service. And nothing else is really going to help you. These other things, yoga, and that will be described later on. For example, that in the sixth chapter, when he goes on to talk about yoga, that if you actually want to practice yoga, already you have to be pretty much free from lust before you can begin. One of the preliminary requirements of yoga is you have to be fixed in a vow of brahmacharya or celibacy. That's just a that's a preliminary requirement. If that's not there, it's not going to be a whole lot of help to you. He must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence. So ultimately, as I said before, higher intelligence means the directions of the Supersoul as it comes to us in the form of a spiritual master, and also through Bhagavad Gita scriptures. That's the higher intelligence, the actual direction that we're given from God. And that intelligence, we become intelligent when we actually accept that direction and we follow it. And by following that we become purified like this. Intelligence becomes strong. That engages the mind in Krishna service. Then the senses all become engaged, and then everything is taken care of in that manner. So, any questions? So we'll do that then. We'll. What day is the first? Well, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. We may not have we may not have classes next week. If I'm going to go off to the Rainbow Festival, it looks like. Huh? I don't know yet anymore. I'm confused about my duty. Apparently to protect everybody from falling down. Apparently the mood of the Rainbow Festival is not to wear clothes by many of the participants. So it's a weird situation to be practicing Krishna consciousness in.
I was remembering there's this pastime that gets inside and see where Prabhupada was invited to speak at this nudist colony.
Yeah. That's where Guhari came from in Gita Nagar. Yeah. It was, and Tamal Krishna Goswami. Guhari was standing naked in an asparagus patch when Prabhupada walked up to him. And according to Guhari, Prabhupada said, "Do you know what you're supposed to be doing?" Yeah, right. Anyway, we've made big plans to go there, so they've asked me to come. So.
You should go. Uh-huh. We're assured success.
Okay, so we may have a class Monday, though, if we're not so busy preparing and everything. Okay, thank you very much.
Jai. Srila Vindra Swarup Ki.